This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. When Detroit City Council President Pro Tem George Cushingberry was stopped by Detroit police, last month after leaving a Northwest Detroit strip club, police found an open glass of alcohol, an empty bottle of booze, a lit marijuana cigarette, and expired registration. Far from expressing any acts of contrition, Cushingberry claimed he had been stopped, quote, for driving black. It should be noted that the two Detroit officers who stopped him were African-American and Arab-American. Now, this has caused many in Detroit to do a collective facepalm, as in, oh, no, not again. To talk about what this all means for the city in practical terms and in terms of the image of its leadership, we welcome back Detroit Free Press columnist Rochelle Riley. Hello.
Thank you.
And joining our conversation, always love having her, commentator, blogger, and author Karen Dumas. Welcome back, Karen.
Thank you, Cynthia. Appreciate it.
Rochelle, I'll start with you. From where you sit, what is more damaging to the city of Detroit, do you think? The traffic stop and these allegations that he cheated legal clients, or the fact that he's agreed to have his law license suspended for 40 days, his dog ate my homework excuses, or the clear attempt to play the race card?
I don't think there's any delineation between any of them. All of it is embarrassing. All of it is unnecessary, and all of it takes us to a place where people are talking about poor leaders instead of working and focusing on good leaders who are trying to change Detroit and the region. It's not just the wrong time, because there's no right time to be, you know, embarrassing and to be a detriment to your city. But this is the worst time in the world for the same type of imbecilic type behavior that has happened in the past.
Karen, is it fair to say there are exceptionally high expectations of this retooled city council when you consider chosen by district for the first time in nearly a century, and then you couple that with the city's historic bankruptcy?
Well, I think the expectations are high because people are just controversy fatigued. I mean, I think that, you know, the city is at a point where we have to have high expectations and equally high delivery. You know, the city's not at a point where we're, you know, it's not no opportunity, it's not time for on-the-job training or to duplicate mistakes of the past. I mean, I think that, you know, constituents are justifiably just, you know, they're tired and they're ready for responsible leadership, and any indication that that's not there is not going to be tolerated.
Rochelle, when you hear this kind of thing and you think about the people in the city who so badly need strong leadership...
Well, you know, I'm frustrated in a way with voters, too. And I know people are beleaguered as they worry about bankruptcy. They worry about the economy. Right now we're worried about the weather, not being able to get, you know, kids to school and get to work. I just can't understand how there could be this many things going on in this man's career. It's almost like he's an habitual screw-up. And people not know enough about that to not elect him. I mean, this is somebody who was in the state legislature forever and then came home and ran for city council. I had somebody to call and say, so his job is literally to find a way to be paid by tax dollars as a career, and what do we have to show for it? So rather than talk about anything that he's accomplished, and maybe that's impossible, it's instead to look for excuses for bad behavior. And there have been a few activists who have... you know, try to claim that this is an attack on black leadership. This is not an attack on anyone. What it is a public examination of someone who is doing things in public that are embarrassing the city, embarrassing the region, and embarrassing the state. I haven't heard these, you know, and again, it's a minority, but I haven't heard these folks who are upset about, you know, people sort of piling on with George Cushingberry speak to the fact that if there were nothing to talk about, we wouldn't be talking about him. You know, if you're a good leader, nobody's asking why you're doing stupid things. If you're doing stupid things, you don't ignore that as some type of nod to any kind of leadership.
But then looking from the outside view, people outside of Detroit, maybe the folks who might be deciding whether to invest money, foundations or businesses, whether they want to perhaps relocate and bring jobs to Detroit. And you look at this track record of Detroit leaders. So you've got Kwame Kilpatrick and so many of his circle at City Hall and elsewhere. You've got Monica Conyers going to prison. You see Charles Pugh, former council president, with all of that, with the bankruptcy, to allegations of sexual involvement with a young man and then vanishing while he was council president. And then now we have Cushingberry. So does that not tarnish black leaders in Detroit?
And I think that that's what a lot of people, you know, can conveniently say. I mean, since Cushenberry wanted to start painting, you know, the race picture in this conversation, is that a lot of people figure or have attributed the city's demise financially, socially, even geographically in terms of, you know, the blight here in the city to failed black leadership, you know. I mean, and because there have been one, two, you know, whoever, I don't think that that's fair to say that every black leader, current or potential, you know, is not capable of delivering quality leadership. But I do think that that feeds into and further fuels the misperception that African Americans are unwilling or incapable of leading the city.
And let me speak to that, too, because it is so sad and so unfortunate and so unfair to the leaders who are doing a good job. This is the first election, this past election, that Detroit residents were able to elect council people by districts. You've got council members who are in their districts doing amazing things. James Tate has got an organization working in District 1 that's awesome. They're having community meetings. People are stepping up to not only make sure their leaders are accountable, but to become leaders. We're not having time to pay any attention to that because of the circus. So the people who really ought to be upset are the black leaders who are doing a great job and who, you know, seem to be painted with this broad brush because of people who aren't doing what they should be doing.
But hasn't City Council been awfully silent? And I'll start with Council President Brenda Jones, who basically said, well, why would you ask somebody to step down for a ticket?
the sigh you hear from both of us is, here we go again.
You know, and look at the power, too. I mean, Rochelle, Cindy, I mean, what power do they have? I mean, and we've talked about and looked at how it appears that council has, you know, collectively been quietly cooperative, you know, during the bankruptcy process, the whole Kevin Orr thing, to maintain their positions. So, you know, that's kind of weighed into, you know, my perception as to why and how they are responding to this situation, and hopefully not indicating how they'll respond to future ones. Not controversy, mm-hmm. but just, you know,
challenges.
Issues that come before them.
What do you think,
Rochelle?
I
want these council members to be measured and thoughtful before they do things, because that has not been always true of some council members. But in instances like this, particularly instances where there are things that are known, we don't know everything, and there are things that were allowed to happen that shouldn't have happened. But if you know that there are things that are wrong, if a council member is apologizing for something, that means he's admitted that he's done something. I don't think that that all power is power by having, you know, all of the ability to govern, not having an emergency manager. I think some of it is power of perception. And I was very surprised. Well, actually, I wasn't surprised, but it would have been one of the things that would have been striking and different had this council censured George Cushenberry in some way or issued a statement letting them know that that is not indicative of the type of leadership that Detroit wants in its future, that they don't want to return to any of the past behavior that has made Detroit a national laughingstock, and that they're going to stay on top of just anything besides, well, we don't see anything really big, mm-hmm. or, you know, equating this to just the traffic ticket when it wasn't just about the traffic ticket. If you don't know everything about what happened, don't say anything until you do know. But once you do know, and once you do, I mean, now that his record over 30 years is becoming clearer and clearer, I don't know that you can sit silent, because there is power in silence, just like there's power in words.
You know, there were a lot of upset people in Detroit demanding an apology from Brooks Patterson, the Oakland County executive, for the things that he said about the city in that New Yorker magazine story. Do you think the same anger and energy is being aimed or should be aimed at George Cushenberry?
Well, you know, I thought it was interesting that there was a call for Kevin Orr to strip Cushenberry of his power from some of the same people who were, you know, calling for Kevin Orr to, you know, be stripped of his power as emergency manager. So, you know, this whole cycle, you know, has just been kind of mind-boggling. But I don't think that people in the city are, you know, embracing or supportive of the behavior of Cushenberry. I just think a lot of people don't know what to do anymore. You know, where do you go? What do you do? How do you establish a level of accountability and then hold your elected officials to that? I think people are confused about that process. But it goes back to, like Rochelle said, you know, this may not or should not be a surprise to many. I mean, he's not new to the political scene.
And the other thing is, this is kind of apples and oranges, only in that the New Yorker, you know, you can hold, you can look at it online, you can see the words, what Brooks did is what Brooks did.
Yeah.
There's an investigation that's still continuing in this case, and I think what people are doing are watching to see just how much, just how deep, just how far before they make some comment. And like Karen said, that's just the ones that are paying attention. For a lot of people, this is just business as usual. They get sick of all of it. A lot of them don't vote because, and I finally am beginning to actually understand why some people don't vote. As much as it pains me and as much as I get really upset about it, if your choices are the choices that they have and they really just don't want to do it, what do you do? I mean, lesser of two evils may be evil, still evil. I just think there's a level of frustration and a level of concern that makes people focus more on what they're doing for their families and themselves and their work than continuing to wade into the morass of trying to understand what's happening with government. And that can be the biggest loss of all.
And in your column right after this all happened, Rochelle, I thought was so from the heart, where you said, how long before the Detroit standard of leadership will not be someone who will drive around with a liquor bottle in the backseat from a party the week before, looking for exemplary leadership? And as you say, some of those folks are in there, but... I can see what you're saying. The frustration is really hard to even put into words.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, Detroit has hundreds of people who not only are exemplary leaders, but are stellar people. But they are not serving in those positions. And I've talked to some of them who said they don't want to be a part of the circus. They're not going to participate in what they've seen. So sometimes what you get is the people who are willing to step up, who either are great leaders who get lumped in with people who aren't, or who are novices who are trying to learn on the job when there's a lot going on. I mean, you're talking about somebody with 30 years of political experience and experience, you know, cutting deals and doing backroom stuff, who may not be the best for the city, but who understands politics. So you get somebody like that at a table with someone who may have been running for office, not for their first job, but maybe their second job. And you've got to tangle with all of that. It's a wild dance. It's a lot of work. I get people calling me every week, you know, about better leadership, who could run. And you can't make people do this job. This is a hard, hard, almost impossible job that's made even more impossible now by waiting for the governing authority that, you know, voters gave you but you don't have right now, trying to figure out what to do. I just think there's a lack of pride in what the job means. I can remember growing up, and the people who were in positions of authority, it wasn't about power, it was about authority and leadership. You didn't walk around without a tie. You didn't use poor language. You didn't let anybody see you in a compromising position. It meant something. It's so different now till it's just sad.
And is there an answer? Do you see a way out? Is there a takeaway from all of this, Karen, for Detroit's elected leaders? We'll start with that.
Well, you know, again, people have, and I agree with Rochelle, you know, on the surface, you know, we have the appearance of a more lax approach to the position. But public service is and should be about that, public service, not self-service. And I think that has shifted over the years drastically. You know, as you pointed out earlier, you know, we see career politicians, they go from payroll to payroll. We could sit here and have an hour discussion about elected officials that just move from position to position and whose track record, in my opinion, may not necessarily justify such. But I think it goes back to voting and being engaged, being aware of the process, you know, and showing a lack of intolerance by not consistently reelecting people who have proven themselves unworthy in the past.
And when you're trying to get the message out to the rest of Michigan that Detroit does matter and that we're all in this together, it sure doesn't help.
Well, there are two things they can do. One is to move to a weak mayor form of government and have a city manager actually manage the city. And the other is to make the positions of city council unpaid so that the only people who will run for those jobs are people who are interested in public service and not a public check.
Yep.
Always great talking to both of you, commentator, blogger, and author Karen Dumas. Thank you so much. And Detroit Free Press columnist Rochelle Riley. And we look forward to talking with you again. Thank you.
Thank you.